DomeRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Mike Coffey of NDNation.com. For the next 15 to 20 minutes, we're going to talk about the Notre Dame basketball. I don't know if I would say fiasco, but let's start with this, Mike. The definition of lunacy or something like that goes that whenever you do something multiple times expecting a different outcome, even though it isn't, that's in effect the definition. So my question for you is there anything that you see that will be any different over the next 10 years with Mike Bray at the helm at Notre Dame?
Well, the one thing I'm hoping for, and it is just a hope at this point, I believe that, or again, hope, that Mike Bray has finally seen the light with regards to the needs for defense, which we saw after Luke Herangode got injured and the Irish went to that burn offense, which its primary role was probably to limit possessions, but perhaps for him, unexpected byproduct is the quality of the defense got much, much better. Now, whether that's because Luke Herangode, who, while being the second leading scorer and rebounder in Notre Dame history, was a terrible defender, and it was putting Tyrone Nash and Carlton Scott in his place, both of whom seemed to be better defenders. Is that where the improvement came? Did the improvement come because we were expending less energy on the offensive end?
You could also do the flip as, was our best defense the slow offense? I mean, did that in effect cause teams to get out of rhythm? And it wasn't that, I mean, you look at it from a scoring standpoint. Yeah, we did, a lot of people didn't score on us, but was it really the intensity on defense, or was it the fact that we stalled the ball so much that teams got frustrated, ended up forcing shots, taking bad shots, and what ultimately looked like better defense really wasn't totally attributed to that?
Well, situations like this, I'm prone to quote my favorite line from Trading Places, can it be both? And it's, in this case, I think it's possible, because a lot of the teams we play in the Big East, very long, very fast, they like to run, they like to try to score as much as possible. You watch Syracuse in the tournament and the games they play, that's the style they love. And by forcing them to play a half-court game and to play 35 seconds or whatever of defense every time down the court, it does get frustrating, because they don't get a chance to force the breaks that the fast breaks that will score them all the points. And it also negates Notre Dame's possible deficiencies and quickness on that end of the floor. Now, the one thing that if Mike Bray and the coaching staff is going to bring at least a variation of this into next year, what they have to do is make the first 20 seconds of it more efficient. I'm all for working the ball around and working for the good shot, but when the good shot is there, the good shot should be taken. There were a couple times during the Old Dominion game where, like, people like Tyrone Nash and even Herangode once or twice, early in the shot clock, they're there, and they seem to have a really good look, but you could tell they're consciously passing it up to pass the ball around more. We can't have that. That's almost wrong in the other extreme. Notre Dame should use its efficiency on offense, definitely try to make a few extra passes and take some time off the clock and slow the pace of the game down. But if they're not going to take the open shots when they're there, then you get into a situation
where you shoot yourself
in the foot.
Right. It's similar to Princeton against Georgetown back in, was that 84? I don't even know if that was 84. But the reality of the matter is, yeah, they stalled you, and then all of a sudden there's a backdoor and boom, they got a layup. And it looked like we weren't doing that enough, at least taking advantage of the fact that you kind of lull teams into sleep. Therefore, when you do get the open look, you got to take it. And you know, going back to the whole issue of, you know, is the next 10 years any different? You know, to me, I kind of like to refer to it as the dilemma of Mike Bray. And it goes like this. One, he clearly is a good, if not very good, seasonal basketball coach, meaning that during the season and arguably in Big East play the last 10 years, he's been very good at times, probably more times than not. You can't argue with what they did the last eight games of the season going up against what they had. The question you got is, first and foremost, should they have been in that situation to begin with, number one? And then secondly, now that they hit into the tournament, I mean, here it is. We've got a fairly decent draw for the first time in a while for us. We get Old Dominion. We then follow up with a Baylor team that, yeah, did very well this year, but kind of new to the block and therefore possibly in a situation where we could pull them out. Had we then faced Baylor and won, we're then sitting with a team that shouldn't be there in the Sweet 16. And so now it's just an uglier taste for us in that here we go again, bowing out in the first round when, you know, in effect, it's the problems of Mike Bray in the postseason are now coming to light. And over the last 10 years, they seem to be indicative of that. We can win basketball games when we shouldn't. He's pulled that off in situations during the regular season when we shouldn't. But it seems like when we're in crunch time, whether it be the tournament or we're loaded with the team that should do well, we end up not doing well.
That describes it pretty well. It's an interesting, I don't know if dichotomy is the right word, but a coach that does so well against top flight competition in the Big East. It's not like Notre Dame's gotten the cakewalk schedule the last couple of years especially. I mean, Notre Dame draws eyeballs to TV, so the Big East wants them to play as many high-profile games as possible. But then you get into the tournament, and his first 3 years, the performance was great. Since then, it's even the one game that they won, they looked a little bit iffy. And I have a hard time envisioning the problem because I don't believe they prepare any differently. One thing I would like to see change, and I don't know whether this factors in or not, it seems like all the time when Mike Bray's talking to the media or if he's being interviewed for whatever reason, and he's talking about the NCAA tournament at any point, he's talking about it like getting there is a goal in and of itself, and if we get there, then the season's been a success. Maybe from one perspective that might be true, especially when you consider the years before he got there. But by the same token, there really is no valor in just getting there and then not looking good once you're there. If you're going to get there, you should put yourself in a position to set a goal saying, you know, we are going to make the Sweet 16 this year. I'd like it if the coaching staff, Mike Bray especially, would say those things. Now, he may be saying those things to the team privately, but I think the general fan interest in the program has reached a point where he needs to start saying those things publicly too. He needs to fire up the fans.
Yeah, I would agree.
In addition to firing up
the fans. You know, I think a perfect example of that would be Tom Izzo and his interview after their win, with that buzzer beater at the second. You know, here's Izzo pronouncing to the world at the press conference that during the game, he was telling his players, this is going to be one of the great wins in Michigan State basketball history. You'd like to believe that Bray is saying the kinds of things like that because ultimately coaching comes down to that. It's how much do you get your players buying in to you conveying that you know what's going on. You've got a game plan that's going to turn a W around for us. And you know, furthermore to your point, I think Bray stepped into it. You know, I don't know if his famous quote was his second year or third year here. But he made the comment, or no, I take it back. I think it was his fifth year here because we had missed the tournament two times in a row. And his point was, hey, look, at Notre Dame, 50% of the time making the tournament is, you know, means for success or whatever he said, something to that effect. And I agree with you. You know, I just think that I don't buy that at all, number one. Number two, that Notre Dame has been and always has been from the days of Digger Phelps. And even before that, I mean, obviously you've got plenty of history with this, with the book that you wrote, but Notre Dame basketball goes back quite a ways and has had pretty decent success. Digger's had plenty of success against number one teams. You know, Notre Dame was a place that was feared to come into. At least it used to be when all of a sudden the very first basket scored, there's toilet paper all over the floor. Obviously we can't do that anymore. But you know, my point is I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, look, and again, I think this gets back to the whole point, the dilemma with Mike Bray. Yeah, he's a class act. Yeah, he gets players that graduate. Yeah, he turns wins that probably should have been losses And the majority of the time he's pulling it off. I mean, he's got a pretty decent record in the Big East. But when it comes down to it, which is unfortunately college basketball is all about the NCAA tournament. Not a lot of teams talk about or a lot of fans talk about how many conference titles they won. It just doesn't go anywhere. It's all based on how you do in March. And unfortunately, over the last 10 years, there's just not a great track record there.
There isn't. And, well, the last 7 years especially were, but I remember that same quote that you remember, and it bugged me at the time that he said that as well. I think to take it a step beyond the dilemma of Mike Bray, it almost becomes the dilemma of Notre Dame basketball, where...
Yeah, I agree.
Right now, college basketball, in a lot of areas, can best be described as a cesspool. You got people milling around looking for, with their hands out, looking for money, looking for this, looking for that. Now, and let's be clear from the outset here. Am I saying that everybody cheats? No, I'm not. But the kind of school Notre Dame wants to be does not necessarily lend itself to having a UConn or Syracuse-esque basketball program. Now, does that mean Notre Dame can't be great? No, it doesn't. And there was a discussion on our board today about Xavier. Xavier, a number of years ago, not a long number, but relatively recently, sat down and decided we are going to have a top-flight basketball program. They are not recruiting thugs. They are not paying players. They do what Notre Dame does. They bring players, it's like in football, they bring players in who aren't necessarily at the top of the academic food chain, but through effort and through oversight and through a commitment to them, keeps things rolling academically. They also took great pains to ensure that their physical plant was as impressive as possible to recruits and fans and everything. They travel by charter solely. They stay in Westin hotels. I mean, they spare no expense because they decided that a top-flight basketball program is a boon to them in attracting students, attracting good attention and things like that. You're not reading about Xavier players on the police docket. You're not reading about scandals or anything like that. If a school like Xavier, which does not nearly have the resources, both financial and otherwise, that Notre Dame has, can pull this off. Why can't Notre Dame pull it off? And the dilemma becomes, what do people like Jack Swarbrick and Father Jenkins and Phil Notebart and everybody else who's on the Board of Trustees, what kind of basketball program do they want to have? My fear is that they look at it from a 20,000-foot view, choose to see all the nasty aspects of it, and say, ick, we're not going to get involved in that. So as long as we're graduating our players and winning at a decent clip, that's okay for us. Do I know they're saying that? No, I don't know for sure that they're saying it, but all of their actions indicate that that's what
they're saying. Yeah, I would agree. And I would argue that Swarbrick coming out prior to the last two games of the regular season and making the comment that he did, and basically backing up Mike Bray, seems to indicate that that's exactly what the administration is thinking, because the timing of that made no sense whatsoever. Simply because had Notre Dame lost the next two games, they don't make the tournament, and you'd have a real hard time trying to convince Notre Dame fans that, hey, let's stick with Mike Bray here. I mean, and again, I think this gets back to the point of the dilemma with Mike Bray. I mean, 8 games ago, here's a guy that was in some deep trouble. I mean, if they finished out the season going 2-6, you're going to have people calling for his head all day long. And instead, he avoids that by making an incredible run. And clearly, I mean, there's not a lot of guys in the entire United States that could have pulled off what Mike Bray did. He lost his top scorer and then somehow rattles off 5 wins against teams he had no business beating. Give him credit for that.
You mentioned earlier about wondering about the players buying into Bray and what he does. I think that situation shows... It gives very, very strong evidence that they do. Regardless of Mike Bray's other foibles, he certainly did not lose this team, and he had the player, whatever he was telling the players, they were buying in. And as I said before, what he needs to do
was
to do with the fans.
Yeah, was that desperation? That was my question.
And, you know, you hope it's not But then again, if it leads to a change in philosophy next year that results in an increase in wins and better recruiting and stuff like that, then part of me says, does it matter as long as the results are what we want? And I'm going to be watching.
As long as the next 10 years are different than the last 10.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I think your point is very well taken, because the dilemma that we face here is, and somebody asked this on our board today, do the fans care more about the program than the administration does? Which, if they do, that's a very bad mix. And it could be that the only thing that's, if that is the case and if that is going to change, the only thing that may get it to change is empty seats at Purcell Pavilion.
Exactly. You're exactly right. And unfortunately, that still is the case right now. And that will ultimately be the telltale sign. It clearly doesn't, the fan base wanting it more than the administration is a real problem, because in effect, you got the administration saying, hey, look, you guys are overreacting. We're not that good. We're not that good of a draw. And the fan base being a lot of alumni, obviously, that make that up. My biggest problem is that Swarbrick should be meeting with Bray and saying, hey, look, what are you doing differently next year? Tell me how things are going to change for you and where you see the positives and the negatives. And you want to be able to hear that. And I'm assuming that kind of stuff is going on. But I'm like you. I would love to see Bray make some improvements based off of the success that he's garnered. My fear is he's been doing it for 10 years. Why should we expect anything different the next 10? That's my fear. I hope I'm wrong, but clearly what isn't going to happen is there isn't going to be any change at the top right now. Bray is going to sit right where he's at, and he might even sit there missing the NCAA next year. Based on what everybody knows he's got and what he's up against. It's clearly an interesting thing.
Well, what I want to see is how this season's recruiting goes. They pulled in a good class last year. Atkins and his crew are definitely highly regarded, and combined with the freshmen from this year's class is a really nice, strong nucleus. Meanwhile, you have Scott, who's going to be around for two more years. You've got one more year from Nash and Hansborough. And I think, not to use a Bob Davieism or but anyway, it seems like the pieces are in place. What I don't want to see is the administration and fans get all bogged down in, oh, we lost Luke Herangode, next year's not going to be good. We shouldn't expect that. If Mike Ray can keep the momentum going with recruiting and bring in a top 25 class this year, that'll be three classes in a row of quality players, and that's what you can build a foundation and some momentum on. Then he has to turn around, as I said, and sell the fans to the same degree that he's selling the players.
Yeah, absolutely, because it should all roll together. If all these things are happening, then it is going to create excitement, and then the fan base will return, and you will see a marked difference. And I think the way you do that is you get to the NCAA tournament more times than not, and then you start knocking some people off. Get to a Sweet 16. If he would have gotten to the Sweet 16 this year, there'd be a ton of interest heading into next year.
And they also have to improve the home schedule, especially out of conference. I mean, I know the Big East is tough, and it's tough to get wins there. Fine, but you cannot bring in again and again this parade of cupcakes and expect people to get excited, because if you want butts in the seats in January and February, get them in the habit of going in November and December by bringing one or two quality teams, and bring in a Dayton, bring in a St. Louis, bring in someone that's going to get the fans' interest. I mean, it doesn't have to be a monster team, just someone the fans are interested in seeing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and that's going to be key for us. I mean, it is something that we definitely need to improve upon, and that cupcake schedule isn't doing us any favors.
Not at all.
Ultimately could have hurt us this year, but luckily for Bray, he had a hell of a run there at the end.
Absolutely.
So that definitely bodes well. Well, we'll leave it there, and hopefully the next time we talk Notre Dame basketball, it will be about good things that are moving forward, and maybe the next year, a year from now, we'll be talking about that Sweet 16 appearance. Maybe not next year, maybe it's the year after that, but let's hope that's somewhere near on the horizon, that's for sure. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For special guest Mike Coffey's Mendy Nation, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.